Okay, we're beginning here on Daf Bet Amud Aleph with the new Masechet Arachin. Masechet Arachin is based on that which is found in Vayikra Perek of Zion, which is the last perek in Sefer Vayikra. In that perek, there are a number of items headed by the Parshia of Arachin. Arachin in the Torah is a table of values that are associated with gender and age. And depending on your gender and age, the tables tell you how much you pay if someone dedicates that erech to the mikdash. As we're going to see in the Mishnah and the Gemara, there's a difference between taking a neder to give the value of an individual to the mikdash versus taking a neder, which arachin is. It's a form of neder of nidrei hekdesh, where one commits to give the erech of that individual to the mikdash. When it comes to a neder about the value of the individual or demay, the monies or the value of that individual, then they go to the marketplace and we find out what the person is worth. So in the times where they had an active slave trade, it's easy to find out how much a person would fetch in the market. Then that's the value that you committed to the mikdash. So that value will fluctuate based on the real value of the individual in the market. On the other hand, erech, which are given by the tables of the Torah, are irrespective of the value of the individual. It has to do with age and gender alone. Aside from that, there are no factors that determine. And so you look up in the table and you match up in the table between the age of the individual, the gender of the individual, and then you know how much you have to pay to the mikdash or commit to the mikdash. Now, as far as these parshiot, the parshiot that are in Vayikra Chav Zayin are not only the parshia of Arachin, you have many different parshiot about commitments or dedications to the mikdash. That includes being makdish stei achuza, makdish stei mikna. The weigh-in is meiser behema, which we did in the last perek of Bechorot. And then you have meiser sheni, charamim, all sorts of forms of hekdesh, or items that you dedicate to the mikdash, or items that need to be redeemed. The mesechta deal with all of these different issues. So just taking a step back to understand that parshia, or the parshia of Arachin, it's very hard to make heads or tails of parshat Arachin. And you can see that sentiment already in the Eben Ezra when he speaks about the parsha over here. He says, V'dat rabim kizo gzerat melech. Says that many believe that this is just a gzerat melech. There's no understanding it. And then he brings l'fit dat agon, where basically there's an opinion that says that every year is worth a shekel. And so then until the age of 5, then you give 5. That's the number when you reach 5. Then to the age of 20, then you give 20 because you have 20 years under your belt. Doesn't work so well when you get to the age of 60 because that's 50. And then beyond that, the 15 after that point doesn't work great either. Ella, they say that the total number equals 75, which is the regular life of an individual. He dismisses that for a number of reasons, including that fact that the ratio or the relationship that happened by the Zachar do not happen by the Nekeva, and therefore he believes that v'chol eile shibushim. All of this is a big mistake when he says about this perush of the Gaon that he tries to bring an explanation. V'klal hu gzeirat ha-katuf. That's what we have here is gzeirat ha-katuf. That is the sentiment of the Eben Ezra. And others also, in terms of the tables and the values in the tables, you can say that is gzeirat ha-melech, gzeirat ha-katuv. It's not something that we necessarily understand. Although, of course, there are going to be, if Hashem Mikra, they try to give meaning or understanding to it. The first of which, not in particular to this item, but in general, what this parshia is doing here is the Ramban. And the Ramban says the reason that this parshia is found here in Vayikra Chav Zayin is because Gamsu Parshat Zvuka. This is connected. Shaita Bahar Sinai Mechuberet Ela Tochachot. Kihi B'Mishpatei HaYovel. Connected to Har Sinai and the Tochachot, the Tochacha that comes beforehand, because the Tochacha surrounds the issues of Shemitah and Yovel, the land and the Kedushat Haaretz. And he says that this is related to that Parshia because of the fact that in this Parshia it discusses the Dinim of land, and what happens in your Makdish land, what happens on the Yovel. So this is a corollary to the Parshia of Shemitah and Yovel, and that's what it's doing over here. So that, again, doesn't give any meaning or reason behind the particular numbers that are found here, or the particular mitzvot that are found here. It's just giving you topically maybe why they're found over here. There's a lot of, I'll call it, smichot ha-parshiot, you have a har b'kukotai, then you have ste'achuzas, ste'nitna, which are affected by the shmita and the ovel. And so then those items which are dealing with donations to the mikdash or hekdesh, that also pulls along with it arachin and other things as well. So it is a connection by association, not necessarily topically in arachin in particular, but the perek or the parshiyah is found here. But again, he doesn't give any in-depth explanation to why that is. The Rabbeinu Bakai brings v'aderech hapshat parsha zu b'dinei arachim b'dinei yovelhi. So in derech hapshat, he brings the Ramban, and he says the same thing as the Ramban. And then he brings v'aderech hamidrash, that be'erech hachan nefashot means amar kodesh bochu l'Yisrael, im atem mivim lefanai arachin, male ani aleichem ki likraftem nafshotechem lefanai. Mar Kodesh Baruch Hu Yisrael b'zchut arachin ani matzil etchem arichut geinom. That's similar. Eben Ezra opens up the parsha by saying atam shidur neder leimor im Hashem yaseh likach efdeh nafshi g'dei arki oech b'ni oech b'ema. So be'erkecha nefashot, according to the Eben Ezra, is a reflection of the person's commitment to Hashem that says that you saved me or you did something for me, therefore I'm going to redeem myself or whoever it is with this erech, or the erech of a be'ema, as a donation to the mikdash, as a quid pro quo for what Hashem did for me, or will do for me. There's the concept, this idea that if you bring arachin, then it's as if you are makriv yourself. It's the equivalent of putting yourself onto the mizbeach, similar to what we say by behemot, when you bring them as korbanot. And the zchut of the arachin, I save you from geinom, which means that the Rabbeinu Bakai over here puts a premium on these nidavot as being something that is positive and saves the individual from geinom, and it seems to be that it is a highly regarded type of mitzvah. And then he says, v'aderech ha-kabbalah, and then he goes in to try to explain why the Kabbalah and Arachin have to do with being the connection to the Kisei HaKavod, and how they're the Merkava of Hashem. And he says, "Mi'adua ki ashorish and nefesh asichlit v'kisei akavod." When Be'er Bezek, ki nafshot shel Hashem hem be'erech kisei akavod, ki gam inei merkava lo yitale. So that the nefeshot are connected to the kisei akavod, which is the cup of the erkacha. That's the kabbalistic connection to erachin and nafshot Hashem. And therefore, he says that that's why it says be'erkacha nefeshot Hashem. That the word erech that has the cup in it is because the cup is the kisei akavod. And it's part of the Merkava. So, more Kabbalistic, I would say, in the meaning, but he tries to bring some sense to what the Arachin are doing, what's the purpose of them. The first one that we see tries to really connect it to the previous Parshiot and give meaning to the numbers that are found in the Arachin is the Balaturim. The Balaturim in general has numbers, gematriot, things like that that you would find in the Balaturim. Over here he says, if you take the sum total of all the arachin that are found in the parshia, which is for a male, it's going to be 5 shekel from 1 chodesh to 5 years. From 5 to 20, it's 20 shekel. 20 to 60, it's 50 shekel. And 60 and above is 15 shekel. The sum total of those numbers is 90. Then if you take the same structure for the woman, which is 3, 10, 30, and 10, so then you have another 53. If you have 90 and 53, you have 143 shekalim that are found here. And he says, well, that is equal to the chaper amem hei klalot shebitorat kohanim, the 45 klalot that are found in the tochacha of b'chukotai, the tzadichet shebimishna Torah, and the 98 that are found in Sefer Dvarim, in Parshat Ki Tavo. So you have 98 plus 45, which is 143. And he says, that's the reason Arachim come right after the Klalot. Or in essence, what he's saying is that the way to rectify the situation of the Klalot is through the Arachim. And the Klei Yakar already spells it out much more clearly. He says, Samach Parshazo the Klalot, Omar, Shisrael no dream ve'et sarah. Jews, when they're in trouble, make nidarim. Ki Yaakov, she'en no der ve'et sarah, liten maser. Just like Yaakov Avinu, when he was in trouble or he was leaving, going to Laban, he made nidarim. He said to God, I'm going to view maser menakol. So he says that this is a response, or the proper response to the tochacha. The reason it's found immediately after the tochacha is because nidarim, and these are all nidrei hekdesh, donations to the mikdash, are the way to rectify or to get out of the problem of the issues that arise because of the tochacha. The Klei Yakar notes that Bnei Yisrael are very successful at doing that when they're in trouble. But when they're not in trouble, they tend to go wayward and not do these types of things. And that's why it's placed here, is because it's a natural phenomenon that people, in response to danger, in response to difficulties, do the right thing and give tzedakah, even though they should be doing it all the time. Nevertheless, they become weakened, or they don't take it as seriously when things are going well. And that's a mistake, because it's something that should not be necessarily connected to tokacha, but rather nidrei tzedakah is that something that should be there all the time, because it's part of the ratzon Hashem, and it's something that should be continued always. Now, as far as giving more reason or depth to the understanding of the arachin and the particular numbers that are picked for ages and gender, the Alshich points out that the parshia begins with the ages of 20 to 60, even though age-wise that's not in order, because of the fact that that's the highest number, that's the main part of one's life. And based on that, the Alshich explains, I'll send you out the Makoro, you can look at it in more detail. He says that that's the major part of a person's life, that's when they're active, that's when they're doing, and therefore that's the shleimut, or the mainstay or part of the life. And everything else is basically a curve off of that. That's the peak of the curve. And everything else, you have a tail on both sides, which are the ages before that and the ages after that, which are less than the shleimut. So between 20 and 60 are your prime years. And then the parsha of Arachim reflects that these are the prime years. And then beforehand, you're growing towards it, you're building towards it, and afterwards you're declining off of that shleimut. So that's just as in a big picture. The two that really address the particular numbers and the distribution of the numbers are the Abarbanel and Rav Hirsch. The Abarbanel says the reason that it came into these fixed tables rather than the absolute value of the individual is because in Eved Darim, Asher Kelo Lo Ratzta Torah She'aricha Kohen Et Nafshot Bnei Adam Kilu Heim Susa Chamor. Didn't want to treat them like animals and assess their value in that way. Didn't want to make them like avadim, like slaves that are sold on the slave market. For a number of reasons. Number one, that's Gnai v'cherpa rutzufalish asher lo nefesh yikara, because that looks at the physical value of the individual, not the nefesh that belongs to them. And it also creates jealousy, because now you're going to have to use intangible items to determine value between parties, and that's going to cause jealousy amongst the people. In order to take away all of that, the Torah went to a fixed table, which disregards whether a person's wealthy, poor, whether they're smart, they're foolish. All those things go by the wayside, and the only thing it does is it speaks to the generic individual and their value on a relative basis. The Abarbanel obviously says this not in the modern era, the modern view, but in the time when the distinctions between males and females were viewed in such a light, that he discusses the distinction between men and women and the natural differences between them, which are undeniable, meaning that there are physical differences between men and women, and in strength as well. Always the strongest man will be stronger than the strongest woman. So there are distinctions that are real or that are natural phenomenon. And so he tries through that to explain the distinctions between the arachin that are found for the zachar and that are found for the nekeva, as well as the numbers themselves as to what they mean or what the context of these numbers are. Abarbanel also points out the idea that the woman gets a bonus for the fact that she reproduces, she has children. Even though it seems to be that the woman's numbers are half of what the man's numbers are, according to the Abarbanel, nevertheless, there are bonuses. So, for instance, the youngest age, it's 5 and 3. It says there they didn't want to use half numbers, it should have been 5 and 2.5. At the next age of 5 to 20, the man is 20, the woman is 10. Then you get to 60, the man is 50, the woman should have been 25. But she's 30. He says that's the 5 is the bonus because of the fact that she can reproduce and that you can have children. That's the bonus that's added in. Again, I'll leave you to read the Abarbanel. Rav Hirsch is the most interesting with regards to this. Now, as opposed to all the previous explanations that look at this, Parshia being a finale and a great end to Sefer Vayikra, as the way that the Klei Yochor puts it, it's the evidence of the Ratzon Hashem, where a person voluntarily comes and donates money to the Mikdash and donates to Hashem. Rav Hirsch views this as being a nispach to Sefer Vayikra, and that is here because of its diminished value, not because of its higher value to be placed over here. And he says the following, This is all subjective donations, and it has nothing to do with what God demands of us, but rather it has to do with the donations to the Mikdash, and has to do with the individual, and it's not part of the Chukim and Mishpatim on the Torah that Hashem gave us as a condition of our relationship with Hashem. And he says, Davar gadol lamadu mikan. We learned something great from this. Torat Kohanim enena miyacheset erech miyuchad nidvot ha-mikdash. Doesn't put a premium or a special status on donations to Mikdash. It's not something that's considered to be a great valor that has special standing for Hashem, and it certainly does not provide kapara. Mikdash ha-kohanim ro'et shlichuto lo b'rechishat nechasim. It's not about the acquisition of assets, and therefore your donation, which is adding to those assets, elo b'rechishat ha-levavot v'aruach. The purpose of the Kohanim and the Mikdash is to touch the souls, the hearts, and the spirit of the individuals. It's about Kiddush HaMusar, Shmirat Mishpat B'chaye HaChevra. It's the sanctification of morality. It is the keeping of Mishpat in the social realm. Harat Ruach V'idun Alev, HaChukim HaMishpitim HaTorot Hem Derech HaYichidah K'dei Lizkot B'chesed Hashem. It's the only way to access Hashem. That is the covenant. That's the only thing that brings them closer together. Therefore, he sees this arachin as being a subjective, nice addition or addendum to Sefer Vayikra, but certainly not part of the mainstay of Sefer Vayikra, unlike all the other mefreshim that we saw before, that saw this as a strong statement of a person's connection to Hashem, donating in the way that it saves them from Gehinom, or protects them from the Tokuchot. Reverse clearly does not see it that way, and that's why it says it was pushed to the end of Sefer Vayikra. And speaks about the difference between male and female, as well as the numbers that are given here relating to the two aspects of an individual. And that is that an individual has an obligation to grow as an individual and themselves, but he also has a tzad that is part of the klal or part of the tzibur as a whole. And therefore the shleimut of the individual is in both of those aspects. When the individual is both engaged in the world of the yachid and in the world of the klal. And he says that the man, who is the one who goes out and is in the world as a whole or in the broader world, he has the numbers that reflect both being involved in the world of the yachid and in the world of the klal. The other hand, the woman who only has the one aspect of it, which is the aspect of the yachid or the akeret habayit, her numbers reflect they being the Akeret HaBayit and Ashlimut in the Akeret HaBayit. And therefore he says that the numbers are reflective of that. He shows how the number from a Chodesh to 5 years old, then if you multiply them by 10, which is a number of Shlimut, you get to the numbers that are found between 20 and 60. So the 5 that is for a man, multiplied by 10, 50 is what he's going to have when he's 20 to 60. The 3 that the woman has is going to multiply by 10, you get it 30 by the time when he's 20 and 60. And then he explains why the man between 5 and 20 has 20, and the woman only has 10. Again, this idea that the man 10 is shleimut, and so shleimut, he has both the aspects of the yachid and the klal, whereas the woman only has the tzad of the yachid, and that's why there's 10 over there. And then you have to explain the back end as to why the woman has 10 in the back end and the man has 15, and the degradation in the man standing in the back end versus the woman standing in the back end, which the Gemara and Arachim will discuss as well. That's a verse in a big picture. And in that way, at the end, he writes, that is the theoretical value of the Nefesh with its relationship to Hashem and the Mikdash. But with regards to Behema, that's a Korban, that is Misamelata, that Nefesh Amit Karevet Hashem. That's the soul that's drawing close to Hashem. Behema Zu Ein La Pidyon, Elhi Atzma Karevala Mizbeach. Therefore, it does not have redemption. It itself goes on the Mizbeach. That's a distinction in the behemoth that follow versus the erech or the values that are associated here with Adam. So they all try to bring meaning to the numbers themselves. So you do find an attempt, at least by Rav Hirsch and by the Abarbanel, to give meaning to the numbers themselves. But again, I'll reflect what the Ibn Ezra says, that he thinks that it's all Gzerat HaKatuv, and that is probably the most plausible explanation of it. Because even though the numbers have some semblance of meaning or pattern to them, everything has an exception. And so you're always explaining the exceptions rather than just finding what would have been a distinct or easy pattern to the numbers that are found here. All right, that as far as the introduction to the Masechta. The Masechta starts out, like many other Masechtos, not necessarily dealing with Arachin, but we'll get there when we reach Dav Gimel, and onwards, the Gemara will come back and discuss the sources within the Psukim and the Drashot that lead us to what we know here. The Mishnah gives you a broad perspective here, which is Hakol Marichin Benerachin. Anybody can be Marich, which means that you can declare that you want to give the Erech of whether it's yourself or anybody else to the Mikdash. Benerachin means you can be the object of someone's commitment to give the Erech to the Mikdash. And similarly, Hakol Nodrin V'Nidarin. And again, we discussed before the difference between Erech, which uses the tables in the Torah, versus Nodrin V'Nidarin, which is your commitment of the value, the actual value of the individual. And again here, Hakol Nodrin, anybody can take such a nether and give the value of themselves or anyone else to the Mikdash, the real value that you would fetch in the slave market. V'Nidarin means anybody can be the object of such a nether. So again, obviously the word Hakol is going to bother the Gemara, and the Gemara is going to know, what does Hakol include? Why do you need to tell me Hakol? Then, the Kol the Mishnah spells out is Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Nashim, Vavadim. So not only does it tell you everybody, but then it goes and lists exactly who is included in this Kol, which are Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Nashim, Vavadim. And in each one of those, you're going to have to ask the question, why did the Mishnah have to specify these individuals, or what's additive in specifying the particular individuals? Tosfot over here just notes that in the beginning of Nazir and in the beginning of Nedarim, they start out with Kinuyim, which means that normally the Neder or Nedarim and Nidri Nazir are taken with the Shem Hashem. And so both Masechtot begin with Kinuyim to allow you to do that without actually using the Shem Hashem and using some sort of form that would be like using the Shem Hashem without actually using it. But those who points out over here is that there are no kinuim over here. And it's not mentioned over here. Because, shaloyim miskirim shem shemaim al arachin. The Tosafot concludes that when people took nidrei arachin, they did not use God's name, or they did not specify the neder with shem Hashem, and that's why the Masechta doesn't begin with kinuim, even though the Masechta is a Masechet Nidarim. It's something where you're committing through nidrei hekdesh to the Mikdash. Nevertheless, there's no kinuim because it seems like the shem Hashem was not used actively in these situations. Now, in terms of Nashim Vavadim, the Rashi and the Tosafot both raise the issue, which is they don't have independent ownership. A woman is under the auspices of her husband, and the Eved is under the auspices of his Adon. So here they make a commitment to the Mikdash. How are they going to pay the Mikdash? Or where do they have the means by which to discharge their obligation? So why do they have the capacity or the ability to do such a thing? So Rashi claims, Umishalmim lachar zman. They're on the hook for later on. Shinid garsha isha or nishtachrer eved. In the future, when the woman is divorced or she's widowed and now she has independent ownership, the eved, when the adon passes away or when he is freed and he gets his own autonomy, then he will have to pay for it. So Rashi makes it as if there's a sort of future IOU that you have to the Mikdash when you gain that independent ownership. If you never gain that independent ownership, then you're never going to have to discharge the obligation. The Baal Tosafot bring an alternative. They bring Rashi's explanation. Then they bring the alternative, which is a woman and a slave can have independent ownership if they're granted the rights to the exclusion of the husband or to the exclusion of the master. If a woman gets a gift and the gift is gifted in such a manner that you have rights to this gift with not your husband, that she can gain independent ownership. And that'll be the explanation over here. It's that it's independent ownership because they were granted such rights in the monies or the assets that they were given. So not to get too far away from Masechet Bechorot, right away we have Tumtum and Androgynous. What is the status with regards to Tumtum and Androgynous? No dream. They can take Nedarim because they are regular Jews. Venidarim. And they also can be the object of a neder because of the fact that they'll fetch a value on the slave market. Whatever that value is, that's the value you're committing to the Mikdash. Umarichin, they also can make a neder arachin because, again, they're regular Jews. They can make a neder to pay erech. The one thing that they can't do is avalon arachin. They cannot be the object of erech. Now, why is that? We just said before, these are tables. You go by gender and you go by age. That's the problem. Gender. the tables, as we're going to see based on the limudim from the psukim, only address absolute gender, which is male and female gender. They don't address situations of either safek or situations in which they have both genders. And so they're excluded from being objects of arachin. Cheresh, shote, v'katan. This threesome is found throughout Mishnayot, throughout Shas, which is there an indication of individuals that are not bardat. These are individuals who don't have the capacity to act on their own. Shote, for obvious reasons, this is someone who's not of sound mind. Katan, because they're below the age. Cheresh, as we've noted many times, when the Gemara says, Tam Cheresh is enu midaber ve'enu shomeya, he's both deaf and mute. And many of the modern poskim have written Shuvot, including Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, about the fact that clear in the time of the Mishnah that a deaf mute was not educated or able to be educated. They did not have the capacity to teach those individuals, and that's why they would be categorized in enu midaber bardat. But obviously today, if they can be educated or they are bnei dat, then the din would be different in those situations. So cheresh, shote, v'katan, nidarim, they can be object of a neder, meaning demei, the value of the individual. They can be narachin, they can also be the object of someone's neder arachin, aval lo nodrim, lo marichin. But they can't be the ones actively doing the neder, making the neder, or making the neder arachin, b'nei shemein b'em dat. It's like any other neder. Neder requires dat. Because it says, lahafli. Lahafli means you have to be able to articulate and understand what you're doing. Absent that, you cannot take a neder. And so these are just like nidarim. And therefore, since they are enam b'nei dat, then they don't have the capacity to actively make nidarim or commit to nidarim of values or nidarim of arachin. The Bale Tosafot just point out that the other places in Shas, seems to be that the Gemara assumes that the cheresh has no value to him. And so, if a person, for instance, causes someone to be a cheresh, then they have to pay, the main nisko, they pay his whole value. Which indicates that there's no value post the being a cheresh. So Tosfot says, either that's only the cheresh that cannot be cured, or inami perish benotam, the cheresh mitei shemayim itlei damim. If a person was congenitally born there, different than when somebody is injured and then that happens. So if they're congenitally born there, they do have value to them. So Tosfot's trying to distinguish between the cheresh that we find in different places as to whether there is or isn't a value to the individual. Now the Gemara begins, Hakol Marichin, as we suspected. The Gemara want to know, what does Hakol do for you, Abir? Latuye Mai, what does that come to include? Latuye Mufla Hasamuch Leish. That is a Mufla, one who is committing, making a neder, but he's not an ish, he's samuch liish. He's close to being an ish. This is a terminology that we're familiar with from nidarim, which is that the threshold for age or coming of age for a male is 13 years in one day, for a female it's 12 years in one day. Within the world of nidarim, because of the drasha of the word mufla or lahafli, we have the capacity to extend, whether it's the rabbanan, whether it's doraita, subject to a machloket, as to whether the limud here is a real limud or just an asmachto, but the idea being that in the year prior to bar mitzvah or the year prior to bat mitzvah, you check if the individual has the capacity to understand and to take a neder by which they are aware of the consequences of what they have done, and then it will be binding. So you can have a neder be binding even though you're not bar mitzvah, or bat mitzvah yet, that's only in the year before. Below that age, it's meaningless. Doesn't matter whether you understand or don't understand. Above the age of 13 and 12, irrespective of whether I understand or not, you're committed because you're ready of age. It's just this one window where we check between the age of a year before you coming of age. So it's 12 years and one day for a male and 11 years and one day for a female. During that year up to the time of coming of age, then you have a muflas amachish, and that's what the kol is coming to teach you over here. They can take such a neder arachin because they're no different than regular nedarim, and that's the terminology that's used that heads off the parshia of arachin, which is derbel b'nei sel v'matilehem ish ki yifli neder be'erkecha nafshot Hashem. You have hafla'a, neder, and so that teaches you this din that this is no different than regular nedarim. And hafla'a, the articulation, the understanding, has meaning in this case as well. Right, so nerachin, so as Rashi points out, the word hakol over here, it modifies all of the marichin, nerachin, nodrin, and nidarim. Therefore, we have to explain all of them. What is the kol telling you about this? So kol nerachim, latuyei mai, latuyei mnuval, umukashkin. That's to tell you that someone who is disgusting, or mukashkin is all full of blisters and sores, that they're included in the parashia of arachin. Now, why would you have thought otherwise? We just said before, the only determining factor for arachin is gender and age. So why over here, all of a sudden, you're taking into consideration what the person looks like, or whether they can interact with people? That is sakadat kamina. I would have thought, because the parashia says, neder verkecha, it uses the term neder, and it uses the term arachin, tim koshi yeshno bedamim yeshno barachin. I might have supposed that only someone who has value is subject or can be the object of a erech. Chosheinu b'damim, someone who has no inherent value, einu barachin, is not included in the parashia of arachin. K'mash malon, the parashia says, nafshot. So now nafshot is kol duhu. Any nefesh, any living being is sufficient to be in the parashia of arachin. So the assumption would be, or the havamina is, the word neder is associated with nidarim or nidrei of value, damim, that you're actually taking a commitment to bring the value of the individual. But then it says be'erkecha. So the erkecha might be subject to neder, or at least governed or qualified by neder, which means only someone who would have fetched money on the slave market is subject to these tables of arachin. Then the pasuk ends, nafshot l'ashem. Any nefesh, any living being is subject to these values, irrespective of whether they'll fetch value on the open market. In this case, it's making it sound like that a menuval or a mukashkin on the slave market would not fetch any value, because he'd be useless to any owner, because nobody would want to get close to them or want to interact with them, and therefore they can't be used. Tosafot does question that. He says, v'yesh lakshot, in the Gitin, it says that if his master sells him, what happens to his knas? Sounds like he has value because the master sold him or is able to fetch some value for him. So he says, over here, Yishlamar da'achim betreit fa'ari. So Tosfot adds on an additional factor. He's not only a manuva and a mukashkin, he's also a treifa. That's what makes him valueless over here. All Tosfot is trying to do is get to a point where you have zero value. Where is there a person with zero value? Very unlikely, but you're dealing in a slave trade, are people going to be willing to put up money to buy that individual? So he's trying to come up with a far-fetched case where someone will carry no value. And the Gemara has a havamina here that based on the psukim, that would also mean they have no erech. The Kamash Malan is a kol nerachin. Everybody has a value in the tables, irrespective of if they carry value in the slave market. So now the next one is, no dream, la tuye mai. So what about a kol no dream? What does that come to include? Nidarin, it's trichole. It's not going to add anything. The reason we wrote a kol nodrin is because of the nidarim, which there we do need it. Nidarin la tuye mai. So then anybody can be the object of a neder. What does that come to include? Ile tuye tumtum vandroginus. If you can tell me it comes to include a tumtum vandroginus, behejek tanilu. Those are explicit in the Mishnah that they are subject to neder. Ile tuye chereshoteva katan. If to say that a chereshoteva katan can be the object of a neder, that's also explicit in the Mishnah. If to tell you that less than 1 month old is also included, that's not in our Mishnah, but that's in the upcoming Mishnayot. The upcoming Mishnayot distinguish between value and arachin. Arachin tables only start at 1 month and older. Whereas demay, if you say the values would start from age zero all the way through to a chodesh. That's already mentioned in the upcoming Mishnayot. So less than a chodesh to tell you that they are the object of a neder for value, that we know. Vila tuye oved kochavim, if it comes to include a non-Jew, behejek tanilu, again, that's dealt with in the upcoming Mishnayot. So what did you not have that a kol nidarim, that anybody can be the object of a value neder, where do you have anything that's not explicitly mentioned? It says, olam latuye pachod mi ben chodesh, it's going to include the case of less than 1 month old. So you said that's already up in the upcoming Mishnah. What do you need it for? Tani v'hadar mifarish. It's giving you highlights, and then it comes back and gives you the details. That means a kol nidarim comes to include less than 1 month old, that they can be the object of a neder for value. And then the Mishnah later on is going to explain to you that. That's how you're going to know that, because the Mishnah is going to tell you that later. So this is like a header, gives you a general statement, and then Ben Chodesh gives you the details later. The way Rashi learns this over here is, V'huadin matzi minkat chad mihanach. The Gemara here just picked one of the items that it just mentioned before. Before it mentioned tumtum adroginos, mentioned less than 1 month old, it mentioned chereshoteve katan, and also mentioned ovei kochavim. It could have used any of those. Any one of those, you could say, is included in a kol nidarim, and then the Mishnah explains it afterwards. If you already tell me the Mishnah explains it, you can pick any of these items that are mentioned in the Mishnah. So Rashi sees it as a broad statement, and the only reason it picked this one out of all those is because it's going to be a machloket Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim later on Daf Hei. So since this is subject to machloket, the Mishnah, or the Stam Mishnah, is indicating like the Chachamim, and that's why they picked this topic over other topics. So from the Mishnah Yetera, that we mentioned the sheet of the Rabbonon, we learned that the Lacha should be like the Rabbonon. The other end, the Rabbeinu Gershom, which says over here, as this unique feature, V'yamarta Maishna, why did it pick me Ben Chodesh? Says, El Agav, the Ben Chodesh, K'tiv Be'oraita, Kamarabe, the Pachod, mi Ben Chodesh. Because in the Torah it specifically says, Be'arachin, mi Ben Chodesh, in the Mala, also in the count of the Levim, in Parshat Balotcha, it also mentions only mi Ben Chodesh, u the Mala. So, Avagav de'reinu deinu nerach, below marichin nider. So even though it's not in the world of the arachin, he is in the world of nidarim, and that's why it's mentioned over here, because it's a unique feature that even though the Torah specifies 1 month and older, and you could add in, beyond what the Rabbeinu Gershom says, that say the person is a safek nefel until they reach the time period of 1 month. And so there you would have thought maybe that 1 month is absolute. And not only does it apply by arachin, it also applies by nidarim. That's the Chiddush over here, that mi ben chodesh, or pacha mi ben chodesh, is still subject to nidarim of value. Now the Gemara is going to move off topic and take a tour of Shas, and we're going to look at the word hakol every time it appears in a Mishnah. We want to know, when the word hakol appears in any Mishnah or any given Mishnah, what's the point of hakol, or what is it coming to include? Hakol sumchim, everybody does smicha on korbanot, the tuyei mai, what does that come to include? Tuye Yorish. That comes to include an individual who's bringing the korban on behalf of their parent. Their parent left a korban olah, or korban shlamim, and then the Yorish inherited them. He brings them on behalf of the parent. Now whether he's acting as an agent of the parent, or whether he literally takes over ownership and it becomes his, is a subject to a machloket. That machloket will have nafkaminot with regards to, for instance, if the parent already did smicha. The parent did smicha and passed away, does the child or the yoresh have to do it again? Well, if they are simply filling in for the parents or acting as an agent of the parent, then they won't have to do it again because the parent already did smicha. If they become the owners of the korban and now they bring the korban as if it's their own, then they would have to do smicha again because of the fact that it's now their korban, not the korban of their parents. Minchat Chinuch discusses this chatira. You can take a look there about how closely related is this Yoresh to the person that he inherited. Udaloka Rabbi Yehuda, and that is not like the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, who believes that the Yoresh is Eno Somech, the Tanya. Yoresh Somech, Yoresh Memer. A Yoresh can do Smicha, a Yoresh can do Tmura. Now, not that he can do it, we're not supposed to do Tmura, but if he does it, it is effective when he does it, because based on the Gemara and Zvachim, it means that the one who can do Hamara or can do Tmura has to be the owner of the Korban for the Kapara. So if you own it for the Kapara, then you have the capacity or the right to do Hamara. And so this indicates that the Yoresh is an owner at least for the Kapara, or he gains some Kapara from the Korban that is brought. Yudomer Yoresh Enu Sumech, Yoresh Enu Meimar. He can't do either of these. He doesn't do Smicha, he doesn't do Meimar. My time with Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position? Korbano velo korban aviv. Because the pasuk says in Vayikra Aleph in the Parshiyah the Shlamim, Rashi notes over here the word korbano appears three times. Never going to have three limudim from it. Tosafot points out, agav chorfei to Rashi. He thought that it mentions it three times, but it only mentions it twice, korbano. And then Tosafot speculates either there's another korbano in the first parak of Vayikra, which there are plenty of, or the word rosho means also Rosh Korbano. And so it's as if it's implicit in the word Rosho. And so therefore you have three times you have a limud. So Beit Yehuda says one of those limudim comes to teach you korbanot v'lo korban aviv. Has to be your korban in order to do smicha, not someone else's korban, including the korban of your father. V'yelif tchilat hekdesh misof hekdesh. And then he learns the beginning of hekdesh from the end of hekdesh. Ma sof hekdesh, meaning smicha, yoresh eno sumech. Because that's something you do immediately before the shechita of the animals. It's like the last thing in the pre-shechita world. Av tchilat hekdesh, which is all the way at the beginning, yoresh eno meimar. He doesn't have the ability to create mura, which is something that deals with the kedusha of the animal, or the early part of hekdesh. V'rabonon, hamer yamir. There's a duplicate lashon of hamer yamir. There are both that the yoresh, to tell you that yoresh can do tmura. Yofin and sof hekdesh mi tchilat hekdesh, in the reverse order. We'll learn smicha, which is the end of hekdesh, from the beginning of hekdesh. Mat tchilat hekdesh by hamara, by tmura, yoresh meimar. He does have the capacity to do it. Av sof hekdesh, so too, the item right before the beginning of the shechita process, yoresh somech, he can do smicha. V'rabonon hay korbano may avdile. What do they do with the word korbano? Bibayilei korbano velo korban oved kochavim. They learned that his korban, your korban, requires smicha, but not the korban of an oved kochavim. So if an oved kochavim sends his korban to be processed in the mikdash, there the Gemara tells us that nisachim have to be brought with that korban. So it's not baked in, those come out of the coffers of the tzibur to provide the nisachim. But what doesn't have to happen is a smicha over here. The kohen who processes this korban doesn't have to do smicha on behalf of the oved kochavim on this korban. Korbano velo korban chaveiro. Same is true with regards to another party's korban. You or the owner can do smicha or should do smicha on the korban. Nobody can do it on your behalf. You can't do it with your friend's korban. The kohen can't do it on your behalf. Korbano l'rabot kol bale chuvrim l'smicha. So now you have the third korbano, and they learn from that that when you have a partnership, all of the bale chuvrim are subject to smicha, or in essence, each one of them has to do smicha. No one is exempt. Each one of them is his korban, and therefore he has to do smicha. They'll have one of them do it on behalf of everyone. All five of them have to do it. Rabbi Yehuda, the rabot kol bale chuvrim l'smicha le'le. Yehuda doesn't hold of this concept that everybody has to do it. Question is, what does he hold? Rashi over here says that tefilei echad sumech l'kulam. One of them can act on behalf of all of them. And it's not like you're being smicha on your friend's korban, because you own a part of this korban, and therefore it's korban, and therefore it's called korbano. So since it is korbano, and you're one of the partners, you can do it on behalf of all the partners of the korban. That's how Rashi explains it here. Rashi in the Gemara in Tumura mentions that you don't have to do it at all. That this is an exclusion, that shutafim, or partners, don't do smicha at all. So over here he says that one does it on behalf of everyone. Over there he says you don't have to do it at all. Ve'inami itle, and even if you think you do require smicha ayde the partners, ove kochavim v'chaveiro michad kro nafko, he can then consolidate ove kochavim and chaveiro to be excluded from one pasuk, because, as Rashi points out, the reason that you can't do it for ove kochavim and the reason you can't do it for chaver are the same reason. It's korbano. It's not korbano. It's not your korban. So they represent the same idea, which is you're doing on behalf of someone. It's not their korban. Therefore, he consolidates those to one korbano. So he has now two korbano left. Chad korbano velo korban aviv. Wanted him to tell you his korban and not the father's korban. That's why he thinks that Yoresh does not do smicha. Bidach harabot kol balei chuvrim l'smicha. And then the last one would then learn like the chachamim that all the parties that are partners in a korban would all have to do smicha on the animal. Rabbi Yehuda, hi. Hamer Yamir, my Avidle, what does he do with the Hamer Yamir that the Chachamim used to say that a Yoresh does Tmura? He violated the Rabot at Aisha to tell you that a woman can do Tmura. The Tanya, the Fishiko, and Yanen with the Beryl of Lashon Zachar, that whole Parshia is formulated in the male conjugation, the Parshia of Tmura. Ma Sufenu the Rabot at Aisha. But in the end, we're going to include a woman, even though the Parshia is written in Lashon Zachar. Tamalomer im Hamer Yamir. Hamer Yamir teaches you that not only is a male, but even a female, a woman is chayevet, or can create tmura, and is chayevet for creating tmura. Why the Gemara here focuses on Lashon Zachar when the entire Torah is written in Lashon Zachar? Tosfot already raises that issue. He says, "V'achagav the chola Torah kula nami b'lashon zachar nemra," and we're not midayek from that. That only zachar, not nekeva. We say any isur that's in the Torah, hishva Torah, ish liisha. That women and men are equal with any restrictions in the Torah. There's no distinction between them. Why over here would you all of a sudden think that there is such a distinction that exists? It says, "V'aval b'tmura ilav kra lo yeshave liish." The reason is, by Tmura, you would have thought otherwise, that they would not be Shevel Ish, Ki Ta'ata, Befer Kamad Tmura. But over there, Tmura does not apply to the Tzibur. Tmura doesn't apply to someone who doesn't own the animal. So there are exceptions to the rule of Tmura. And so therefore, you already see that there's a limitation or qualification of who can do Tmura. And you would have thought that that qualification then also excludes a woman because of the Lashon Zechar. So once you have exclusions or other things that are being dropped out of the world of Tmura, you would have thought that also has impact with regards to a woman. That's why you need a riboy, or a specific riboy in this case. And that comes from Hamer Yamir. Rabbanan, where do they know that a woman is included? Me ve'im Hamer Yamir. The vav, or the ve'im, is extraneous. Rabbi Yehuda ve'im lo dorish. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't think that that's a sufficient reason to be dorish. He thinks that's just a linguistic style, not a drusha. And so therefore they come up with their difference in opinions with regards to Yorish, which is Rabbi Yehuda, who has one less drusha than the Chachamim, ends up with a situation in which he thinks that the Yorish is not doing smicha. He has an extra word, korbano, because he believes that shutafim, either one does it for everyone or nobody does it, and therefore he has a specific miut that says korbano, below korban Yorish. For that reason, he excludes the Yorish from smicha. The Chachamim, on the other hand, have it a riboy from Hamer Yamir, and that riboy then extends to smicha as well. And they use the korbano by smicha to exclude Anovi Kochavim and Chaviro, and to include Kol Balei Shutafim. All partners have to do smicha. So that's the hakol there, was to include a yorei. Alright, so now we continue our tour through Shas. Hakol chayavim b'sukkah. Everybody is chayav in the mitzvah of sukkah. The tuye mai. What does that come to include? The tuya katan shein tzarich leimo. To tell you that a child who doesn't need his mother is then chayav in the mitzvah of sukkah. Obviously, he's too young to be chayav in the mitzvah of sukkah because he's underage. What it means here is chayav in the mitzvah of sukkah means that his father or his mother are responsible for being mechanechem to be mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah. It's now we have a mishnah, katan shein tzarich leimo. Katan that doesn't need his mother, chayav b'sukkah, is required to be in the sukkah. Over there, the Gemara discusses what it means, Shein Tzarich Leimo. Rashi quotes it over here. It's that when he wakes up in the night, he doesn't call for his mother. If he wakes up in the night and calls for his mother, then he's already considered to be a Katan Shein Tzarich Leimo. Gemara over there says everybody does that. Anybody who wakes up at night, they call for the mother. The Gemara there qualifies it and says, someone who wakes up in the night and calls for their mother, and they don't stop calling for their mother until their mother actually shows up. That's Tzarich Leimo. They just wake up and they call their mother, and then they able to either assuage themselves, calm themselves down, or fall back asleep. That's a katan shein tzarich leimo. Ve'en tzarich leimo already, he is ready to be in the sukkah, he's ready to live in the sukkah. It seems logical because, first of all, the woman is exempt from the sukkah. And the whole idea of the sukkah is you live in the sukkah like you live in the house. So he has to be independent enough from his mother in order to have the obligation of sukkah. And that's why it's a katan, shein tzarich leimo. At that point, he reaches the point of chinuch, where he can go live in the sukkah, he should be living in the sukkah. Hakol chayavim belulav. Everybody is chayav in lulav. Letuye mai. What does that come to include? Letuye katan ayudeya lenaneya. That comes to include a katan who knows how to shake the lulav. It's not a katan ayudeya lenaneya chayav belulav. Katan that knows how to shake the lulav is chayav in the mitzvah of lulav. Many point out over here, what is interesting is that the mitzvah of lulav does not require a nanunim, does not require the shaking of the lulav. All it requires is midahag ve'yotzave. The Gemara says, as soon as you pick up the lulav, you'll say the mitzvah. So why shouldn't the qualification of the mitzvah of lulav be picking up and not the nanunim? So you have different outcomes from that, according to the different rishonim and achronim. Some suggest that means that the nanunim are a part of the mitzvah. How integral to the mitzvah would be questionable. Maybe they're just a hider mitzvah. Maybe they're just the cherry on top. Or maybe they really are a part of the mitzvah, part and parcel of the mitzvah. They're so integral to the mitzvah that if you don't do the nanuim, you're not really yotze the mitzvah lulav. Even though when you pick it up, you yotze, it's not a real full discharging of the obligation. The nanuim are part of it. You can go as far as to say that. The other way it is formulated is to say that the mitzvah of chinuch does not involve simply teaching them parts of the mitzvah. It's only when you can teach them the proper way to do the mitzvah that there's a mitzvah of chinuch. And so the proper way to take the lulav is not only to pick it up, but also to do the nanuim. And since that's the proper way to do the mitzvah of chinuch revolves around the capacity of the child to do the mitzvah properly, like they would do it when they're an adult. Not some portion of the mitzvah, or some haphazard part of the mitzvah. It has to be the mitzvah bishleimuta. And that's why it mentions the nanuim over here, because that shows you that it can not only do, pick up the lulav, but it can also do the nanuim, which include moving it front and back, side to side, and then up and down to the six ruchot. Akol chayavim in tzitzit. Everybody is chayav in tzitzit. La'atuyei mai. What does that come to include? La'atuyei katan hayodeya li'itatei. That comes to include a katan that knows how to do atifa. Titania, we have a brighter katan hayodeya li'itatei chayav b'tzitzit. A katan that knows how to put on a talit and do atifa is chayav in tzitzit. So now over here, we'll discuss two issues. One is, what is the atifa? The Gemara in other places notes that there's an atifa that's done by Avelut. And by Avelut, the atifa is ki atifat ha'ish me'ilim. It's like the way that the Arabs do their atifa. That's how the Gemara describes it. And the Geonim connect between the atifa of Avelut and the atifa of the Talit. So that the atifa of the Talit should mirror that of the Avelut. And that of the Avelut mirrors that of the Arabs. The way that they wear their kfiya on their head, that's the way that you would put on a Talit. So now, atifa, we do it. Sometimes you have to be an atifa, sometimes not an atifa. So we make sure to do atifa right in the beginning of putting on the talit, because of the fact that we make the bracha of lihita teif, but tzitzit. Which shows you both that the mitzvah is on the gavra, not on the beged. And number two is that there is a requirement of atifa. And that atifa is what we do in the beginning. Later on, when we're wearing the talit, we sometimes cover the head, sometimes don't cover the head. That's sufficient in terms of atifa. But in the beginning, we want you to do a full-fledged atifa. So over here, there are tshuvot that are brought, and Rav Avadia Yosef has an extensive tshuva on Yechaveh Da'at, where he explains what's the proper way to put on the talit, and his evidence is overwhelming, and it's compelling the way that he describes it. So I'll just give you a quick rundown on how he describes what you do. You put on the talit on your head, and then you roll it up in the back to the point where you have got basically two long pieces like a scarf in front of you. Then you take the right side of that scarf and throw it across your face and over the shoulder. That will give you the effect of the kfiya, which is the Gemara mentions it has to be al sfato. It has to cover his mouth and reach until his nose. Many mistakenly think reaching until the nose means from the top. They pull the talit over their eyes to reach their nose coming from the top. Reaching the nose is from the bottom, not from the top. The way that Rav Avadia Yosef says is, have you ever seen an Arab walking around with his eyes covered down to his nose? He said he'd be falling all over the place and tripping up. That's not atifa. Atifa is from the mouth, covering the mouth up to the nose. And therefore, it comes from underneath. So when you pull the right side across the front of your face and throw it over your left shoulder. Then you take the left side and also throw it over your left shoulder. So now that all four tzitzit are in the back, he gives other proofs to this because of the midrash that says that David HaMelech went to the bathhouse and he was upset about the fact that he was naked from the mitzvot until he saw Brit Milah that gave him, that assuaged him with regards to not having a mitzvah. But there it describes, kolatz mutai tomarno, all my limbs do mitzvot. One of the limbs that does the mitzvah is the mitzvah talit on the neck. So where do you do the mitzvah talit on the neck? So this be described here. When you throw the talit over the side there, it wraps around the neck, and that's the mitzvah of talit that's done around the neck. As well as the midrashim that speak about in Kriyat Yamsuf, on the left side they were protected from the tzitzit. It's again this idea that it was wrapped around and hanging over the left side, all the tzitzit. There are lots of evidence to the fact that that's the way to do atifat the talit. And in the morning when you make the brocha, to do a proper atifa, again, I'll send out the mekorot on this, you can see that it's very compelling, the way that Rav Avadia Yosef explains it, not the way that many people do it by pulling it over their head and over their face to do the atifat talit, because that's not katifat ishmaelim. Again, he says, the ishmaelim don't cover their eyes, they cover their neck and their mouth, not the other way around. The other thing to note over here, and Tosfot already points this out, is is this mitzvah still relevant today? And that is because, im yesh lehem talit, Tosfot says, if the child has a talit, then you teach him to put on tzitzit when he reaches that age. V'im lo yuchal liknot talit, enum chayavim. If you can't buy a talit, then you're not chayav. Ah, wait about the fact that the Gemara Menachot brings the story of Rav Katina, and the malach who bumps into Rav Katina says, you're wearing the pishtan in the summer, and then you're wearing the salvelav in the winter, and that the corners are cut off of it. You're not chayav in tzitzit. So you're right. You're not chayav in tzitzit because you're wearing bigadim that are turim in a tzitzit. Yet he still questions him, why aren't you wearing tzitzit? And Rav Katina says, do they punish for this? And the malach answers him, be'idan deritcha. When God's angry, he takes retribution on people who didn't wear tzitzit, even though you're not chayav in tzitzit. From there, it sounds like you should actively engage in the mitzvah of tzitzit. You should be mechayiv yourself in tzitzit. So why does Tosfot over here say if you don't have the money for a beged, or you don't wear a four-cornered beged, you don't have to wear tzitzit? Sounds like from the Gemara in Menachot, that's not the case. The Beit Din and Ritva, God punishes when people don't opt in to doing a mitzvah like tzitzit. So Tosfot here makes a distinction. He says, Hainu davka b'otana yamim. That was only in their day. The Kol HaTalitot that you bought Arbak Knafot. All their clothing was four-cornered. Va'ika onesh lotosh mishanel toli pater. And someone who goes out of his way to cut corners, and make himself patur mitzitzit, that's a problem. Aval bizman hazeh shirov HaTalitot turim. Naturally, most of the clothing you wear is not chayav in tzitzit, because it doesn't have four corners. Ein onesh l'mishenu kone Arbak Knafot. Then there's no punishment for someone who doesn't go out of his way to put on tzitzit. So that Tosfot makes such a comment that today the mitzvah of tzitzit would not be an obligation because of the fact that we don't normally wear arba knafot. And since we don't wear an arba knafot, you don't have to go out of your way to make sure that you have arba knafot in order to have tzitzit. If you happen to have it, then you need to put tzitzit on. Very interesting view of the Balei HaTosafot. And we find in the time of the Rishonim already, there's a extreme weakness in the kiyum of mitzvah of tefillin and the mitzvah of talit or arba knafot. But the mitzvah of tefillin is because of the problem of guf naki, and so they stopped wearing tefillin altogether. That's why there's a big push in the Rishonim to get people to wear tefillin, at least for davening, so that the mitzvah of tefillin doesn't go by the wayside, and everybody can be shomer their guf and have a guf naki for that short period of time of davening, as well as the fact that it would be edut sheker with regards to kriyat shema, and so therefore they're push very hard to bring that back into the world of mitzvot and not just let it go by the wayside. The same thing you find in the Eben Ezra and in the Balei HaTosafot and other places, that the mitzvah of tzitzit is also going by the wayside the same way that the mitzvah of tefillin is, but here for a different reason, which is nobody's wearing four-cornered begadim anymore, therefore nobody's wearing tzitzit or wearing a talit. So the Eben Ezra makes a similar comment. He says, at least for davening, people should wear a talit. You should have it on, at least when you're saying Kriyat Shema and Mitzvah Tzitzit, and for davening it's appropriate. And then he says, and even afterwards, he says that it makes sense to do the Mitzvah Tzitzit, because Uzchartem, it called Mitzvot Hashem. There's a value in the Tzitzit itself that it causes you to Uzchartem, it called Mitzvot Hashem. If that's the case, then even without a four-cornered beged, you should put on a four-cornered beged and put on Tzitzit in order to have that sign or that symbol on you. And Rav Meir Lichtenstein points out, it's like the Tudat Zehut of a Jew. Mezuzah, tefillin, tzitzit. And so, if you want to identify as a Jew, the identifying factor is tzitzit. And that's why the Mishnah Berurah and many write, with regards to wearing tzitzit out, how could you be embarrassed by the gift of the melech that comes to you? But again, it's something that identifies the individual. That ID card makes you into a Jew. Mezuzah, tefillin, tzitzit. Those are the items that make you or identify you as a Jew. And therefore, a person should be engaged in that mitzvah, not just when they have a four-cornered baguette, or not just during davening, but all the time they should be engaged in such a mitzvah, and you see a push amongst the Rishonim to revive the mitzvah of tzitzit, even though at the Balei HaTosafot over here point out that it's gone by the wayside, and another Balei HaTosafot in Shas, they point out the fact that when they go to bury people in tzitzit, they didn't want to bury them in tzitzit anymore, because how could you bury somebody in tzitzit and say that they were mekayem mitzvah tzitzit when their whole lives they didn't wear tzitzit? You can see this concept that people were not wearing tzitzit or the mitzvah of tzitzit had gone by the wayside. Those are just two little things that came out of this. Next is Hakol Chayavim B'Tfilin. Everybody is Chayav in Tfilin. Le'atuyei Mai. So here already we're dealing with items that are coming out of the Tosefta now, not necessarily from Mishnayot, but the Tosefta also has terms like a kol. And then when you say a kol chayivim tefillin, what does that include? The dei katanu yodei lishmor tefillin. That goes for a katan who knows how to keep his tefillin. Now lishmor tefillin doesn't mean just to keep them, protect them from getting lost. Keep them means that the mitzvah of tefillin has a higher standard of awareness than tzitzit. Anybody can wear tzitzit. You don't need to have awareness, except that the way that the minhag is today is that the person is toilet trained so that it's not the bizayon to the tzitzit. But other than that, you can wear tzitzit. You don't need an active awareness. And you can wear them into the bathroom. You can wear them into makomotam, into nafim. Then tefillin require an acute awareness of the fact that you have Shem Hashem on you, that they have kedusha associated with them. Your thoughts, your body have to then be committed to the tefillin. And so that has a higher standard. And that's what it means. Lishmor tefillin. He knows how to properly treat tefillin, not just in the physical sense of treating tefillin and taking care of them, but in the idea of his ability or capacity for the awareness that is needed for tefillin. And that's why it's hayodeya lishmor tefillin instead of just hayodeya to do the mitzvah of tefillin. Tosfot adds an additional factor by tefillin, which is that tefillin are very expensive. And so it's not just about doing the mitzvah. It means that he has to be able to take care of the tefillin, because they are so expensive, as opposed to lulav and tzitzit, where he could do it in a very easy manner. The tzitzit already owns the baguette, he's just putting on his four-corner baguette. Lulav, he can borrow his father's lulav and do it. So the only time where you have to really make a serious investment of money to do this is by tefillin. And maybe that's why it says here, lishmor tefillin, which is not only, the awareness we spoke about, but also the physical preservation of these items because of the cost of these items. That's the point of chinuch at which a katan starts to wear tefillin. Hakol chayavin b'riyah. Everybody is chayav in riyah. Over here, it's a subject to machloket Rashi and the Balei Tosafot as to what riyah that we're speaking over here. Rashi says hakol chayavin b'riyah means being ole laregel. Someone who has to appear in the mikdash on the regel. That's what we're speaking over here, which is that all your males have to appear in the Mikdash. That's what we're speaking about here. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot say it's not speaking about the appearance in the Mikdash, because he brings from the Yushalmi that everybody is chayav. Like in Hakel, everybody has to appear in the Mikdash. The only thing that's uniquely associated with the Zachar is the Olat Riyah, the Korban Riyah that has to be read, which is Lo Yireh Fanai Rekam. You can't come empty-handed into the Mikdash, and that's what the Riyah that is speaking about here. So Rashi says it's speaking about the appearance in the Mikdash. Tosafot says it's the appearance into the Mikdash with an empty hand, meaning that you have to bring a Korban, and it's referencing to the Olat Riyah, not to the appearance in the Mikdash. L'tuyeh mai, what does that come to include? L'tuyeh mish chetsu eved v'chetsu ben chorin. It has to include an eved that was owned by two masters, and one of the masters freed him, the other one didn't. So he's half eved, half ben chorin, half free man. Half slave is referring to an Eved Kanani. And since you would have thought maybe he should be patur, because we have a principle that you're coming for Adon Hashem. Only someone who has one Adon, the Adon Hashem, is chayav in Riyah. Someone who has another Adon, master that sits between him and Hashem, does not participate in the Riyah. So you would have thought he might be patur. But here where he's a chetzio Eved and chetzio ben chorin, he is chayav. That's what it comes to include. And Ravina, who thinks that you are patur in that case, that Tzad Eved for man makes him patur because he's still not autonomous. He still doesn't only have one Adon Hashem. He still has an Adon that governs over at least part of his life. Therefore, he's patur min Riyah. Then what is it? Latuye? Latuye chiger. Biyom rishon, benit pashet, biyom sheni. Someone who was lame or could not walk or had difficulty walking on the first day, and then became healthier or was cured by the second day. Meaning that one of the requirements of coming up to the Riyah is Shlosh Regalim, Beregel. You have to be able to walk up there on your own. You need to be able to have an ability to walk easily from the base of Har HaBayit all the way up to the Mikdash and then appear in the Azara. That's who's Chayav in the Riyah. If you can't do that, like a Chiger over here, who can't do that, then he is patur. But what happens if on the first day he was incapacitated, but after that he was fine? Are you allowed then to go on the other days and accomplish the mitzvah of Riyah? So it's actually a machloket, It's a machloket about how it works, the tashlumim. Hanich amandamar kulan tashlumim ze leze. Works well according to the one who says that each day is a tashlumim for the day before, meaning that each day is an independent mitzvah. So even if you missed it on the first day, you can still do it on the second day. Aval amandamar kulan tashlumim the rishon, according to the one who says that the ikar mitzvah is on the first day, and then every subsequent day is just tashlumim for that first day, then l'toyemai, what are you coming to include? If you were incapacitated on the first day, you're patur now. To do tashlumim afterwards is meaningless if you weren't chayab when the ikar mitzvah was taking place. This type of chakira that distinguishes between tashlumim, each day being independent, versus tashlumim the rishon, appears in different areas of halacha. One of the ones that is somewhat important and will come up again this summer, it has happened numerous times over the last number of years, is with regards to Havdalah. When you make Havdalah on Motzei Shabbat, that is the prime time or the right time to do it. If you don't do it on Motzei Shabbat, you're allowed to make Havdalah until Tuesday. When you make Havdalah later on in the week, is that Tashlumim for Motzei Shabbat? Or is each day an independent mitzvah? You still have an obligation to do Havdalah. When you do Havdalah on Sunday night, like after Tisha B'Av, is that a new Havdalah because you didn't make it before? Is that really Tashlumim because you didn't do it on Motzei Shabbat? The Nafkamina comes up actually in Avelut. It's a Machloket the Rosh and it's Rebbe the Rami Rutenberg. What happens if an Avel is an Onain Motzei Shabbat? If Motzei Shabbat was an Onain, he was Patur from Havdalah at that time. Now he's an Avel. The bait was buried. When he does he then have to make up Havdalah later on? Can he make Havdalah now on Sunday night or on Monday night? Because he was Patur at the time that Motzei Shabbat exited. That would depend on this same idea. Do we see the other days as being Tashlumim for the Motzei Shabbat? That's the case. He can't make Havdalah now because he couldn't make it then either. But if you see it being an independent mitzvah of Havdalah, then you'd also have to make it now. So they're saying the same thing here. According to Ravina, saying that a chider is chayav on the second day, don't you believe the second day is an independent mitzvah from the first day? You believe it's a tashlumim for the first day? He was patur on the first day. He can't be chayav now to do tashlumim for something that you were never chayav in the ikar mitzvah. So latuye mai. So then, what does that come to include? Latuye suma bechat meinav. To tell you, someone who's only blind in one eye is chayav in the mitzvah of ri'iyah. Uduloki haitano. And it's not like this Tana who says someone who's blind in one eye is not chayav in ri'iyah. The Tanya. Yochanan ben Dahavai Omer Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Suma Be'achat Me'enav Patur Min Ariyah. Someone who is blind in one eye is Patur Min Ariyah. Shnemar Yireh Yireh K'derech Shabbat Yireot Kach Ba Le'ireot Yireh and Yireh. Yireh means to see. Yireh means to be seen. There's a hekesh between them. I'm loosely translating and doing this here because it's a major machloket in the Rishonim, as that explained this Gemara here. Just like you see with both eyes, so too you should be seen with both eyes. First of all, it's a question as to which pasuk is being quoted over here. The Rabbeinu Gershom has a huge chiddush over here that says that the word yireh and yireh over here are not from the din of yireh kozrucha pnei Hashem, rather from the psukim that are found by Akedat Yitzchak. And he says yireh and yireh come from that pasuk in Hara Moriah by the Akedat Yitzchak, and not from the pasuk by the Regalim. So that's first of all a huge chiddush that nobody else says, but he says it comes from the pasukim. You can see that in the Rabbeinu Gershom. He says v'ikadamrei me'ocha v'yikra Abraham Hashem b'makom ahu Hashem yireh sher yemei harayom v'asher Hashem yireh klomar yireh et makom v'et abayim sham v'yireh l'abayim sham, that he will see the place that's there and he will be seen in that place. That, why is it called Har Hashem Yireh and Har Hashem Yireh? It's because you have to appear there to others, whereas you also have to see others that appear. And just like they see you with two eyes, so do you have to see them with two eyes. That's one drasha that Rabbeinu Gershom brings. Then he says, V'ikadamri, brings another drasha, Ma Lirot Beit Einav, just like he has to see with two eyes, Haino Kohen. Kohen suma bechat meinav, shenu re'et et ha nigaim. You're not allowed to, as a Kohen, if you're blind in one eye, to see nigaim. Dichtiv l'chol marei einei ha-Kohen. To the eyes, in plural, of the Kohen. So when he looks at nigaim, he has to be able to see through both eyes. Afa lirot bebet einav. So too, someone who comes to appear before the Kohanim or in the Mikdash also has to be able to see with two eyes. So he says, just like the Kohen Yireh has to see the Gaim with two eyes, you have to appear before the Kohen with two eyes. That's another explanation. And then the third explanation that he brings, which is the more mainstream explanation here, which first of all uses the Pasuk that's found by the Shlosh Regalim, as well as saying this, Tichtiv, it says, Yireh, Bikarinan, Yireh. So it's written, the wording without the Nikudot, you would have read it as Yireh, means to see, but we read it as Yireh, which means to appear. Ma'abal Yireot, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shehu Ro'eh Lo'olei Regalim, Hu B'shtei Enav. He appears to the Olei Regalim with his two eyes, Kibiyachol. Avo Tan Shebayin Le'ra'ot. So too, those that come to be seen should appear with their two eyes. So here he says that it's, you come to be seen by God, and God is sees with his two eyes. So too, when you appear before God, you need to appear with your two eyes. And that's similar to what Rashi brings over here. Rashi says, it's like God comes to see you, and God is always shalem, it has nothing missing. So to you who appear before Hashem, you should be able to be of seen with your two eyes. And Rashi in Chagiga gives a slightly different version of this, which is, just like it says Yireh, and we read it Yireh. So the Yireh kol zvuchah means the Shekhinah. And Yireh means you. And therefore it means, Kederach sheba lir'otcha, just like he comes to see you, kach hu ba lir'ot mimcha. He also being seen by you. Ma lir'otcha b'shnei enayim, just like he comes to see you with his two eyes. Ape lir'ot min Adam. He also there wants to be seen by the Adam with his two eyes. That's a slightly varied version of what we have here. Over here we have it that just like Hashem sees you with his two eyes, so do you need to appear with your two eyes. Rashi and Chagiga, at least according to the Bach, is saying just like you come to be seen by God with God's two eyes, so too God is there for you to see him with your two eyes. So that's the simple drasha of Rashi that's brought over here. That was the last of the drashot that we brought from the Rabbeinu Gershom. What's interesting is the Rabbeinu Tam over here thinks that that's the incorrect explanation over here, because Rabbeinu Tam points out, Rabbeinu Tam says that can't be the proper explanation. Because the Shekhinah doesn't come to see. Shemakom makom hu. He's everywhere, and therefore he doesn't need to come to see. He is there by definition. Vote. And the other problem is the Darish Mesoret Kodem. And you're also darshaning the Mesoret before the Kra. Adra bayulano the Drosha Mikra Kodem. You should be Doresh the way that it's read, and not the Mesoret first. Okay, Garis Rabbeinu Tam. The Bach says that the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Tam was either Yireh Yireh or Yireh Yireh. That it was the Yireh, which is the way we read it first, and then the Mesoret afterwards, which is Yireh. And therefore, my Yireh means just like the person appears before a Kodesh Baruch Hu to be seen by God's eyes, both of his eyes, so too the Adam comes to see God with his Shtei Einayim. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it over here. So those are all the different versions of formulating this drasha. And then the Gemara goes back and says maybe it comes to include a Chetzu Eved Chetzu Ben Chorin. The Kashalach to Ravina. What about Ravina who said that a Chetzu Eved Chetzu Ben Chorin is Patur Minariya? Lokasha kan b'mishnah rishonah, kan b'mishnah akronah. It depends which version of the Mishnah that you have. It's not. Mishkatzio Eved Chetzio Ben Chorin. Someone is half an Eved Kanani, half a Ben Chorin. Ovedet Yerobo Yom Echad, Ve'etzmo Yom Echad. He works for himself for one day, and he works for his master for one day, Divrei Beit Hillel. Amrula Beit Shammai, Tikamten et Rabo, Ve'etzmo Lo Tikamten. He took care of his master was getting his 50% that he deserves, but he's not taking care of him. Yeah, he can work half the time for himself, but the Shiv Chayinu Yachol, he can't marry a Shivcha Knanit because it's Chatzi Ben Chorin. Bat Chorin and Yachol, he can't marry a free woman because of the Chatzio Eben Knanit. Yivatel, so what do you want him to do? Desist from being married and procreating? Halolo Nibra Olam, Elo Lepiri Averivya. The world was created for Pru Urvush Nemar, The world wasn't created to be desolate. It was created to be settled. We just spent time on this in the Gemara in Bichorot, so I'm not going to repeat it again here, but it's interesting that the Gemara calls it Periyarivya and brings the Loto Vara, the Shevet Yitzara, which leads to all the different opinions that we find with regards to the nature of the mitzvah, how the mitzvah applies to Jews, non-Jews. Are there multiple mitzvot over here? What is the gather of the mitzvah Periyarivya? We spent a lot of time on that in Bichorot, but it's the same thing I ever hear. Because you could have brought the Pasuk of Pru or Vu, instead they brought Lo Tov Vara L'Shev Yitzarah, and it says Lo Nivraham El Piri or Veriv, just calling it Pru or Vu. So, leaving that aside, because we discussed it in the Bechorot and in other B'nivamot, and the other places where this appears, what Beit Shammai is saying to Beit Hillel is, you're leaving this guy in a lurch, because he can't do anything. He can't get married, and therefore he can't accomplish a very important or fundamental mitzvah. Elam Ipnei Tukon Olam, we force and we compel his master to free him. And then he gives him an IOU, basically that he buys himself out and says, I'll pay back that buyout in order to free him. Because Beit Hillel backed away from their position and agreed with Beit Shammai. So Mishnah Rishona is when Beit Hillel still argues on Beit Shammai. Mishnah Achrona is when Beit Hillel already accedes to the view of Beit Shammai. That's the difference over here. Now, the way that Rashi reads it over here is that the Mishnah Rishona called him Shodu Beit Hillel, aval achar shechazru l'odot, hovi yadeinu l'shachoro kemishchukra adami. Since we have the capacity to free him, we're going to compel him to free him. It's as if he's free, because his master has no control over him, because we can compel the master to release him. Therefore, he's not called an Adon Acher. So even Ravina will agree, according to Mishnah Achrona, that the Chatzi Evan and Chatzi Ben Chorin is really free. And since that's the case, he's chayav to go up to do Aliyah Regel and to Yireh to appear before Hashem. And that's what a kol comes to include that case in the Mishnah Chorona. Ravina's comment that Chatzi Evan and Chatzi Ben Chorin is patur was based on the Mishnah Rishona, based on Beit Hillel's position before they reversed, recanted on their position. Because over there, he really would be stuck in this position where he still has an Adon. If you have another Adon, you're not chayav in Riyah. That's the way Rashi reads it. So just know that the Rambam reads it just the opposite. He says that the case where Ravina thinks you are patur is in Mishnah Achrona. Because at that point, we have the ability to compel him to free him. And since you haven't done it yet, he's not considered to be free, since you haven't done it. And therefore, he's patur miriya. On the other hand, before the Mishnah, in the Mishnah Rishona, where he was Chatzi Evan and Chatzi Ben Chorin, over there he's chayav, because in the period of time, this is going to be the best he's going to have. This is the situation that he's in. And in this situation, he still has autonomy at least half the time. And that autonomy is going to force him to be chayav in Riyah. So that's the way to read it according to the Rambam, whereas the Bar Rashi reads it the way that we read it first. Now Gemara says, Akol chayavim itpiyat shofar, letuye mai. What does that come to include? Letuye katan shigia lechinuch. Got to include a katan that reached the age of chinuch. Rashi says, "Plukti beberek bachur diyoma." How old is a child that reaches the age of chinuch over here in terms of tkiat shofar? So Rashi quotes you the Gemara in Yoma. Gemara in Yoma says that it's either, and here there's a girsa question in Rashi, which also relates to the girsa and the Gemara in Yoma. One is kavar shmone, kavar teisha, 8 or 9 years old, and one says 9 or 10 years old. That's when you start him doing chinuch for fasting on Yom Kippur. Rashi claims that's the same age for the chinuch of shofar over here as well. The Bali Tosafot say that's not the case. That's for fasting. Every mitzvah has its own age threshold. Just because the age threshold for fasting is that age, doesn't mean the age threshold for chigia lechinuch and other areas is not different from that, like we saw by tzitzit and like we saw by tefillin, that there's a distinct age for each of those. So to hear by shofar, there's a distinct age, and it has nothing to do with the ages that are brought in the Gemara and Yoma. And therefore, Tosafot disagrees with that and says that here it also have its own independent din as to when he knows how to blow the shofar. He knows how to handle the shofar. That's not. We have a Mishnah. Emak vimet katan litkoa b'yom tov. We don't stop a katan from blowing the shofar on Yom Tov. Some point out that they think this is Yom Tov shechaliot b'Shabbat. It's a Yom Tov that falls out on Shabbat where there's a gzeras chachamim, takana derabo, that you're not allowed to blow shofar on the day of Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat, because Shema Yarvivenu Dalad Amot Birshuta Rabim. So that's the case here, and that's why you wouldn't normally allow to blow. But yet, we say, we don't stop him from blowing on Yom Tov. You may not actively engage with him, but you don't stop him. And according to Rashi in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, the Baal HaTosfot over here, there's an additional distinction between a katan shigia lechinuch and katan shelo yigia lechinuch. Now, a katan shelo yigia lechinuch is being addressed by this Mishnah Brayta over here, Eim ha'akvim et ha'katan l'toa b'yom tov. But if they yigia lechinuch, then not only eim ha'akvim, but mitaskim. You can actually actively involve and help them to learn that mitzvah of tkiyat shofar. Others make no distinction between the two types of katanim. And therefore, you can be both Enum Akev and Mitasek with both of them. And some see it the other way around, that those that are Gia Lechinuch, Eim Akvin, you don't stop them, but we don't actually engage them. Whereas the ones that are younger, you can play around with them, you can work with them. Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot learn over here, V'yesh Lamar, don't you Gia Lechinuch Shmirat Shabbat? He reached the age where he's Shomer Shabbat, and below Gia Lechinuch Tkiat Shofar. And has not reached the age of Chinuch for Tkiat Shofar. That's the child that Eim Akvin, you don't stop him from doing it. So he's already at the age we understand Shabbat, but even despite that fact, he doesn't really know how to do the shofar. That child you don't stop. But he's already reached the age where he knows about Shmirat Shabbat, and he knows about blowing shofar. There, not only do you don't stop him, you actually actively engage with him and help him to learn the shofar. That's the chiddush of the Braita, that if you deal the chinuch, even though it's Shabbat, we allow you to teach him the mitzvah of shofar, despite the fact that there's this gzeirah of not blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Shechaliot B'Shabbat. There are also those that suggest that, unlike the Baal HaTosafot, we're not speaking about Rosh Hashanah, Shechaliot B'Shabbat, we're talking about regular Rosh Hashanah. On a regular Rosh Hashanah, you're not supposed to blow the shofar beyond the mitzvah of shofar of the day. And over here, these are extra blowings that are not associated with the mitzvah of the day. Nevertheless, we say, Mitzad Chinuch, Eimak Fin, where lo yigia lechinuch, and if yigia lechinuch, you can actively mitasek in them, you can work with them in order to blow the shofar, because it's part of the mitzvah of chinuch. And a kol comes to tell you that anybody can blow on Rosh Hashanah, even once the mitzvah is completed. If it's a maisa chinuch, then you can blow the shofar with them, even though normally if the child wasn't there, you wouldn't be able to blow the shofar. All right, we're going to stop here on the last line of Bet Amud Bet.